Rajika Chajasta Tasa Sri Srimadis Divine Krishna He Sivakti Vahe Dante Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Iskan Bibhiti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Rem Jagahosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Hadwaita Gadadhara Sivashadi Go Bhakta Vinda Ki Shishiradha Krishna Go Gopinashyama Kundaradha Kundikiti Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Mathura Dham Ki Mayapur Navadvip Dham Ki Jumunamayi Ki Ganga Devi Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Tulsi Devi Ki Samavita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Sankirtan Yajna Ki. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to the simple devotees. Gaur Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text Number 43. Tushtam Nishamya Pitaram Lokanam Papitamaham Devarshihi Paripapracha Bhavan Yan Manu Pichchati. Tushtam nishamya pitaram lokanam prapitamaham devarshihi pari prapracha bhavanyan manu prichati. Satisfied. Nishamya, after seeing, Pitaram, the Father, Lokanam, of the whole universe, Papitamaham, the great grandfather, Devarshihi, the great sage Narada, Paripracha, inquired, Bhavan, yourself, yet, as it is, ma, from me, anuprichati, inquiring. The great sage Narada also inquired in detail from his father, Brahma, the great grandfather of all the universe, after seeing him well satisfied. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of understanding spiritual or transcendental knowledge from the realized person is not exactly like asking an ordinary question from the schoolmaster. The schoolmasters in the modern days are paid agents for giving some information, but the spiritual master is not a paid agent, nor can he impart instruction without being authorized. In the Bhagavad Gita 4:34, the process of understanding transcendental knowledge is directed as follows. Tat vidhi pratipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyanti te kyanam gyaninas tattvadarshinah. Arjuna was advised to receive transcendental knowledge from the realized person by surrender, questions, and service. Receiving transcendental knowledge is not like exchanging dollars. Such knowledge has to be received by service to the spiritual master. As Brahmaji received the knowledge directly from the Lord by satisfying him fully, similarly one has to receive the transcendental knowledge from the spiritual master by satisfying him. The spiritual master's satisfaction is the means of assimilating transcendental knowledge. One cannot understand transcendental knowledge simply by becoming a grammarian. The Vedas declare, Svastasvatara Upanishad 6.23, Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata goro tasyaite katita hi artaha prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto one who has unflinching devotion to the Lord and to the spiritual master does transcendental knowledge become automatically revealed. Such relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master is eternal. One who is now the disciple is the next spiritual master. And one cannot be bona fide and authorized spiritual master unless one has been strictly obedient to his spiritual master. Brahmaji is a disciple of the Supreme Lord, received the real knowledge and imparted it to his dear disciple, Narada. And similarly, Narada, as spiritual master, handed knowledge to Vyasa, and so on. Therefore, the so-called formal spiritual master and disciple are not facsimiles of Brahma and Narada or Narada and Vyasa. The relationship between Brahma and Narada is reality, while the so-called formality is the relation between the cheater and the cheated. It is clearly mentioned herewith that Narada is not only well-behaved, meek, and obedient, but also self-controlled. One who is not self-controlled, specifically in sex life, can become neither a disciple nor a spiritual master. One must have disciplinary training in controlling speaking, anger, the tongue, the mind, the belly, and the genitals. One who has controlled the particular senses mentioned above is called a Goswami. Without becoming a Goswami, one can become neither a disciple nor a spiritual master. The so-called spiritual master, without sense control, is certainly the cheater, and the disciple of such a so-called spiritual master is the cheated. One should not think of Brahmaji as a dead great-grandfather, as we have experienced on this planet. He is the oldest great-grandfather, and he is still living. And Narada is also living. The age of the inhabitants of the Brahmaloka planet is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The inhabitants of this small planet Earth can hardly calculate even the duration of one day of Brahma. So this purport by Srila Prabhupada emphasizes the relationship and explains the relationship between a spiritual master and a disciple. Prabhupada compares the relationship to what we ordinarily have in terms of teachers and students. And he says that it's not the same. Because an ordinary teacher enters into a relationship with a student for the purpose of gaining something, specifically gaining some money, dollars. In other words, as much as people may be dedicated to the academic profession, a great percentage of their dedication is based on earning a livelihood. Traditionally, this was not the system. A Brahmin was never a salaried person. A Brahmin means a teacher. A pundit is a teacher, a learned person. Was never a salaried person. Because as soon as someone gets a salary, they are controlled. And the last thing in Vedic society that anyone wanted was that the Brahmins should be under the control of any other section of society. Rather, their intelligence was supposed to be free to always choose the truth in all circumstances. Nowadays, we see that due to political and economic, social pressures, those who are teachers often have to teach a particular syllabus. Sometimes they may not even agree with it. Although we sometimes like to think that, for example, science is a very pure endeavor for finding out the laws of, you know, the universe and nature, a great deal of scientific investigation is determined by economics. In other words, there are so many different individuals and power brokers who have particular agendas which they want to enact, and they engage scientists for this purpose. Without understanding, there's no understanding of what the final goal of life is. What is a Brahmin? Basically, a Brahmin is one who knows Brahman, who knows the spiritual truth, who knows what the essence of life is. Aryan, another word is Aryan, that's used in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna tells Arjuna, you're an Arya. You're not acting like an Aryan. That word Aryan was coined or was adopted by the Germans, the Nazis, during the Second World War in a false way. The real meaning is one who knows the real purpose of life. So Arjuna was told, you're an Aryan if you don't know what the goal of life is. Now, if we go to any university today, which is supposed to be a place of learning, and we ask the students, do you know what the goal of life is? Why the students? If we ask the professors, do you know what the goal of life is? Very few of them will agree with what is stated in the Bhagavatam. Not just the Bhagavatam, very few of them will agree with what is stated in practically every scripture of the world, that the goal of life is to understand who I am in relationship to who God is, to understand our loving relationship with God. This is the goal of life. But there are so many departments of learning in a university, and none of them are dedicated towards this purpose. In spite of the fact that many universities began as religious institutions, even the most famous universities in the United States, like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, they began as seminaries. They began as places for the priests, the ministers, to be educated, because it was expected that those who were ministers should be educated sufficiently to be able to preach nicely to the public. In fact, learning was generally in the hands of the religious people. Traditionally, when you go back in history, Western history as well as Eastern history, you'll find that the persons who were learned were religious. Because actually knowledge is a certain form of power, strength. And if knowledge is not reposed in the proper hands, it becomes misused. Just like we see, it's mentioned in our scriptures, that the military science was not just entrusted to ordinary persons. Anyone like the Kshatriyas, the persons who were Kshatriyas were called, ideally was supposed to be Rajarshis. Now a Rajarshi is a Raja, a king, and a Rishi, a learned person. Without being a Rishi, a learned person, to gain the knowledge of the Dhanur Veda, the knowledge of the parts of the Vedas which deal with weapons, was very risky. Just like now we see the United States may be heading for, you know, a military confrontation with another country. Without going into the politics of that, the question is whether either side has sufficient wisdom in how to use these weapons. In fact, one of the claims that the United States makes is that they have to go to war because the other side that they want to battle with is not qualified or capable of being trusted. They have chemical weapons of mass destruction and they're threatening to use them. So this is exactly the point that we're making here, that someone who has powerful weapons without wisdom, without discretion, is very dangerous. Of course, now the question is whether the United States has such wisdom. They say that the other side doesn't, but who says that they do? In fact, we see that the whole world lacks the type of wisdom which is expected here of a Brahmin, of a teacher. So, this is a very precarious situation that the world is in today. It is described as a body without a head. A society that has no qualified teachers is a misdirected society. Not that there are no intelligent people. There are plenty of intelligent people. But their intelligence is not properly utilized. Prabhupada gives the example of a monkey as a very intelligent animal. Amongst the animals, monkeys are said to be very intelligent. But they're called, you know, their intelligence is misused. I mean, they're intelligent in regard to animals. I mean, I don't mean to say that they're so intelligent. In another sense, Prabhupada calls them ignorant, foolish. Because in terms of humans, certainly they're very foolish. Human beings are foolish or intelligent based upon whether they know ultimately what is the absolute truth. So, in that respect, Prabhupada sometimes would refer to the teachers in the universities as Maya Britta Gyanis. They were Gyanis, which means they're intelligent, but Maya Britta, their intelligence is stolen or bewildered. Why is it stolen or bewildered? Because for intelligence to properly function, it has to be guided by some type of system of knowledge. And in regard to the understanding of the absolute truth, which system of knowledge is best? The system of knowledge that is based upon understanding through sense perception? Just like we see a person like Descartes, who's a very famous philosopher. So he immediately could understand that the senses will often yield incorrect information or knowledge. He said, you can't trust your senses. So then what did he do? He finally decided, I will trust in my thoughts. I think, therefore I am. So he, first of all, based his understanding on doubt. He said, you have to doubt everything the senses tell you because they're confused. But ultimately, he trusted in his intelligence, in his ability to reason. But that's also limited. Especially when it comes to understanding things which are beyond our understanding. Now you may say, well, how can you understand what's beyond your understanding? Then you have to come to the point of accepting something on the basis of faith. And not unreasonable faith, because then again, faith has to be based on reason. But faith is a necessary ingredient. And what should that faith be reposed on? In the scriptures it is said that believe in us, believe in the scriptures. And that is called Shabda Praman. Evidence which is coming from the scriptures, evidence. Instead of depending upon my own intelligence, instead of depending upon my limited sense perceptions, I will depend upon the knowledge I get from scripture. So a person whose intelligence is guided by scripture is said to be able to understand or become successful. The opposite is said in one sense, in the 16th chapter of the Gita. One who uses his intelligence whimsically can neither be successful in this lifetime or in the next. So the successful use of one's intelligence is to repose it in understanding the scripture for knowledge of the truth. As far as how to work a machine, that you can learn in a university. As far as so many things about the material world and its workings, we may learn. But even then, we will not be able to fit together all of the pieces of the puzzle properly. The reason why we are convinced in so many ways about Vedic culture is we're so unconvinced about the present state of affairs of the world. If the people who are intelligent, the same people who make the universities and make the syllabi of the universities are in charge of the world, there's something wrong. The world is in a state of chaos. Society has become chaotic. The social systems are breaking down. The economic systems are breaking down. The political systems are breaking down. Therefore, we have lost trust in their intelligence. This is one of the major reasons why we prefer to believe in scripture. Just like we base our belief in scripture also on the basis of the persons who embody scripture. When I met my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, I felt here is an ideal person. Here is the kindest person I ever met. Here is the most wise person I ever met. All qualities that I saw in Prabhupada convinced me this person is better than anyone else I ever met. So if he is better than anyone I have met, then it must be that the philosophy which guides his life is better than any other philosophy. Similarly, the culture which is described in our scriptures is a very ideal culture, a very ideal society. And we're trying to recreate that society, which is not easy in the present world. That requires some adjustment, no doubt. But Prabhupada was, to a certain degree, uncompromising. If you adjust too much of the Vedic culture, then you lose its purity and its essence. So it's a very fine line of discretion to know, to discriminate, which things can be adjusted, which cannot be adjusted. Sometimes it is said that modern-day religions have adjusted so much that they have lost the essence of religion. If you study many religions, you'll see that practically God, in its traditional understanding of God, has no place any longer. Sometimes people tell us, you should adjust your religion. You should give up the wearing of the dhotis and saris, give up the eating with your hands, give up eating, you know, Vedic types of recipes, give up, you know, deity worship, give up chanting, give up the scriptures. What's left? If we keep adjusting and giving up, there's no substance left. So we have to hold on to these things. Our conviction is that this is a superior culture. And we will try our best to, you know, make it available. We will adjust where we can, but not so much that it will lose its power, lose its purity, its value. So what is a teacher, a Brahmin, is one who lives by the teachings. This is the biggest difference between an ordinary teacher and a Brahmin. A Brahmin, or here mentioned a guru, is an acharya. An acharya means one who teaches by example. It's not that he speaks one thing and does another. In the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Haridas Thakur is described that you act properly and you speak properly. Some people act properly and don't speak properly. Others speak nicely but don't act properly. But you do both. You speak nicely and you act nicely. This is a teacher. Because we don't simply learn by hearing words, we learn also by studying the example of the person. So, one has to hear from a teacher, a guru, if one wants to get out of this cycle of birth and death. If you want to learn about what is beyond ordinary comprehension, you have to hear from someone who has such knowledge. But that means that you have to have faith from your side, and you have to select a proper person to hear from. That means you have to be a qualified student, and the teacher has to be a qualified teacher. Both persons have to be under disciplinary vow. Prabhupada says, unless the person who is a student one day becomes the teacher. That means the person who is a disciple one day becomes a guru. It is not very difficult. It's not very difficult, but one has to learn to control, and that takes some time. There are six things mentioned here which have to be gradually controlled. Speaking, anger, the tongue, the mind, the belly, and the genitals. And Prabhupada says especially sex life has to be controlled. And this is the most difficult thing to control. It is the greatest disturbance comes from sex agitation. I always remember, you know, it practically, Prabhupada taught me, this is a statement from the Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, it said that everything comes about in this material existence by the combination of male and female. And we were driving on the Los Angeles freeway, and Prabhupada was seeing all the big skyscrapers and huge traffic jam, and he said it is simply sex life. In other words, he reduced everything to the point of saying that all of this has come about on account of sex agitation. So we get entangled in the material world more and more through sex life. And similarly, we can get liberated from material existence if we properly control sex life. There are different ways to control sex life. One is to not have any sex at all. If one can completely focus his or her attention on other subjects, then one can avoid sex entanglement altogether. If one cannot, then one is told to get married. Then in married life, sex life is also regulated for producing Krishna-conscious children. Then the husband and wife, the father now become father and mother, and that same-sex tendency becomes purified by raising nice Krishna-conscious children. So, in that sense, sex life becomes a liberating force. This is not an instruction which requires that one become frustrated. If one feels that he or she cannot control and do without sex life, then use sex life for the purpose of liberation. Use sex life according to Krishna's instruction. Dharma Vaduta Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatasava. I am sex which is not opposed to religion. That requires to have the cooperation of husband and wife very nicely. The husband and wife should both be under the guidance of guru. Then it will be successful, the marriage. So,
one should hear from such a person, a bona fide guru. One should be a bona fide disciple. If there is a bona fide guru and a bona fide disciple, then not just information, but transcendental knowledge will be transferred. The purpose of having a guru is to gain transcendental knowledge, to get free from ignorance. And it is mentioned here that this exchange takes place by satisfying the spiritual master. How does one satisfy the spiritual master? It is each devotee must follow some general practices which are true for everyone. There are general instructions which everyone is supposed to follow, just like we explained to go to participate in the morning program, to chant one's rounds, a required number every day, 16 rounds on the beads, to worship the guru, worship the deity, worship the Bhagavatam, worship Tulsi, worship the Vaishnavas. These are general instructions which everyone is required to do. And then there may be some specific instructions. If a disciple is fortunate to be able to have a personal audience with the spiritual master, he or she can gain the special instructions which are just suitable for that disciple's situation. Sometimes you may not get to directly deal with the spiritual master, but if you get directions from one who is directed by the guru, that is just as good. That is not any different. And those instructions should be carried out to the best of your ability. It's not always in your control what the result is. The guru is not going to be pleased or displeased necessarily by the results. The guru is pleased or displeased by the effort, because the results are not always under one's control. There are five factors in every action, and you're only one of them. So you can't totally be held responsible for results. But you can be held responsible for your effort. If your effort is sincere, then the guru is automatically very pleased. And when the guru is pleased, then Krishna becomes pleased. So, it's not difficult to gain transcendental knowledge. We have to understand how to do it. We have to go to its proper source. That proper source is the bona fide guru in disciplic succession. We have to take up the process of trying to please or satisfy the spiritual master, even by our menial tasks. Here it mentions the verse, tatvini pranipratena pariprashnena sevaya, that you should approach a bona fide guru and surrender, ask questions, and offer service. These are the things to do with the guru, to surrender. That means sometimes we have to be prepared to do what we may not want to do. Or we may be asked to do something, don't do something that we want to do very much. But surrender means that whatever I am asked to do, I shall do. And questions are meant not just for the sake of curiosity, satisfying one's curiosity. Questions are meant to remove any obstacles on the path of devotion. Especially this is the purpose of questions. And gradually questions may also be asked about Krishna and how to please Krishna. The science of Krishna consciousness, the philosophy. If you're reading, then one may want to clear any philosophical questions. So questions and offering service, as we have said. It could be even the most menial service. And we should understand that if one is asked what is the most important service you can do for your guru, the most important service is to chant your rounds every day faithfully and to follow the four principles. Because if you do these things, everything else will come. Everything else will follow from that. So this is the essence of what is being explained here. Narada Muni is approaching his guru, who happens to be his father, Brahma, and Prabhupada has taken the opportunity to explain to us what a genuine teacher is and what an ideal student is. Does anyone have any questions? Well, that's okay then. No questions. Maybe everything was so clear that it didn't do. Nobody has any questions. Any of our guests have any questions? All right, then we will stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. For payment, I did.